think it's helpful to get in as light as possible, but I also think it's really helpful here to know your buyers, to like be regularly talking to them, because you listed the percentages there of who would pay what. Like you said, there's edge cases of people that they don't care what the down payment is as long as the cash flow is killer.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the hosts of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 251, and today we are going to start a four-part series, 12 Common Mistakes Investors Make Structuring Creative Financing Offers. If you're looking for a mentor, check out roimentors.com. Jeff has two mentorships, the Apprentice Program and the Creative Financing Academy. You can learn more about these at roimentors.com. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. Looking for a free creative financing class? Jeff hosts a virtual one on Zoom the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
Thank you, Nicole. Welcome, both of you. It's been a while since we have all three of us together.
Yeah.
So I thought, creative finance, or more specifically, owner finance, has become very, very popular in the last few months. And as I start to see more and more people trying to structure offers, I see certain mistakes that people make. And I'm curious. Well, I don't know if you guys can see the PowerPoint. Do you see the PowerPoint? Okay, great. Yeah. Just off the top of your head, Cody, could you name like maybe an easy mistake to make, or maybe something that you have seen that would agree with the statement that people are making some mistakes?
Yeah, I'd say like down payment being too high or payment being too high. Those are probably two of the most common.
Yeah. What about you, Nicole? Have you noticed anything? Do you see any owner finance or creative financing deals come across your desk?
Yeah, and it's what Cody said, the down payment, but also the term, like the length of the term, 2 years or like a year, to me is not really like, I mean, in some cases, I guess it's helpful, but I don't know.
It really depends on what the true exit strategy is going to be, right? I mean, if it's a rehab and it's a year, okay, that works. Mm-hmm. If it was going to be like a BRRRR strategy, maybe, 18 to 24 months might work. But if the goal is to own a rental or, more of like a turnkey kind of thing, or, try to sell to an owner occupant. Yeah, that's not going to work. So, well, I'm glad we're on the same page, because I think we've got those two or three objections or mistakes, plus nine others. So why don't we get into this? And I'm certainly open to both of your feedback. Chime in with your thoughts and questions, and we'll kind of run through three mistakes per episode for the next four. Okay, you both know that this is a big deal for me, which is mistake number one, not gathering enough information from the seller, the realtor, or the broker. Matt, Cody, you're smiling. Well, how many times have you heard me say this over the years, right?
Not only heard you say it, but also have done it. It's painful.
Yeah, all right. And the difference between gathering the amount that you need, which makes your job so much easier, or missing some things, which now makes your job much more difficult.
For sure.
Not understanding the seller's situation leaves you with less information or less ways of creating good solutions. If I don't find out underlying debt, if I don't find out approximately what the monthly payment is, if I don't find out what kind of down payment they're open to or how long of a term, now I'm either structuring deals or offers based on what I want, or I'm just guessing. Nicole, what typically happens when we guess?
We're wasting lots of time.
Well, we just have our chances of getting a deal are decreased significantly, right? So if we understand truly what someone needs and or wants in some cases, less wanting now based on the market changing, than maybe we were 3, 4, 5 months ago, where we were trying to give every seller what they wanted, right? Now we're trying to identify needs. So when you don't do a good job of pre-screening, that you really don't know what kind of down payment is required. And I'll give you a really good example of that. We have a lead that we've been working on for several months, and the seller told us that he was very flexible, and that this is a $12 million apartment complex, and he threw out an idea like a week or so ago, which was 35% down and 5% interest only payments for 3 years. And I can tell you, I know both of you would know, that's not something I would be interested in. My acquisition manager knows that too. And he said, well, just put together what you want. Now it is clear that whatever his thoughts were before have now changed. And now he's thinking somewhere, you know, how am I going to get 30% down? And he's not going to get it from us. So, but if we'd asked the right questions up front, a lot of times we'll get those kinds of answers and be able to deal with them, at that time, rather than continue on and keep trying to work this lead where we really don't have that big of a opportunity to get this as a deal. How long of a term is the seller willing to carry the financing? So, Nicole, you brought this up already. And if we don't ask the right questions, if we don't gauge what people's interests are, then we're guessing. It's interesting. My guessing, 5, 6 months ago was starting with a 3 to 5 year term. And now I'm trying to start with a 7+ year term. Things have changed. Yeah, I'm okay making those offers, but if we're talking to someone that says, I need my money in 2 years, wouldn't that be something that we'd want to know up front?
Yeah.
Asking the right questions so you're offering the seller enough monthly cash flow, right? So we've got to know, if this was a landlord or someone, we'd want to know what they were making. If they have underlying debt, we'd want to know what that is. If we're offering someone $1,300 and their underlying debt is $1,225 and they got a bunch of equity, that's probably not going to cut it. But getting these answers will really help us in terms of structuring a good offer. And when we structure good offers, we tend to get a much higher conversion rate.
Yeah. And I didn't really, it didn't register in my mind, how important those questions were until I started structuring my own deals. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I don't know how long this person is willing to go, or their max or whatever. Or it really registered once I started structuring my own offers.
It typically goes that way, right? You hear me tell you that you want to focus on this, but hey, you're happy that you're getting, hey, they said they are open to terms, and you think that, hey, the hard part's over now. But when you are the one trying to structure the offers, having this information is the difference between making it super easy and making it super difficult.
Yeah. And if it's some information you need to go back and get, that could be a deal killer as well. I found the more times I need to keep reaching out to get more and more info,
people are frustrated
to get a response, and the more it drags out and nope, somebody else made a better offer, or no, not interested anymore.
Yeah. And if you call back and you said, look, I totally slipped my mind, I forgot a question or two, not a big deal. You start doing it more than that. I could see how, a lot of sellers are skeptical to begin with. And if you're showing them reasons to make them be skeptical, that the answer is usually no. All right. So understanding the seller's story may lead to some bigger opportunities. And so if we actually dug a little deeper and we found out a seller needs $10,000 or $20,000, it doesn't really matter what the number is, ASAP to bail a child out of jail, they don't care about everything else. What they care about is I need that money and I need it now. Well, it probably gives you permission to structure the rest of the terms however you need them to be to make sure that, hey, this deal works for you, even if that down payment might be more than what we really want to pay. If we don't dig and we don't listen, we don't get that information. By asking the seller, usually when we structure these types of deals, we put little to no money down. I assume that will work for you. Great way. That's what I've taught for years on how to figure out, will they accept little to no money down? And if the answer is yes, well, you just got a great deal for yourself. And if it's no, it at least gives us an opportunity to talk about it, get a better idea of what they're looking at, and potentially some negotiations. Either way, where we have a much better idea on where we want to go or whether we want to pursue this lead. And I feel like in the changing market, we want to pre-screen them out as fast as we can. So people that don't fit with what we're trying to do, we want to move on, right? So before, we would try to work the deal because, you know, everyone, no one really needed the services like they do now. And when I say that, yes, of course they still did, but less of them needed the service. So most sellers that we work with opt for a 10 to 20 year plan. Does that work for you? I'd like to usually give an actual term to the seller. That way, I could follow this up. Although I've had a number of them opt for 25 to 30 years lately. But I want to put that idea in their mind. That way, hey, 10 to 20 year plans are our sweet spot. We certainly can figure something out over that time frame. And then they have to go against what you're telling them that most people do. So they might feel a little pressure to push back. But
yeah, and it probably gives them some comfort too to know, like, okay, that's normal to go out that long, or
right,
okay, other people are doing that as well. That's good to know, because they often haven't done an owner financing deal, so they would have no reference for how long it usually goes.
That's right. Do either of you have any different ways that you like to ask, like down payment or term?
No, I think these are really good. I think just the wording tweaks slightly, like on the duration, it's like, yeah, we usually go, I mean, we can go all the way up to 30 years. Usually people go 15 to 20. Do you have an idea of how long you'd be open to going?
Great. Yep. I like it.
I've tried other ways, but this is like, these are like the best. It's just, it's all about positioning when you're talking to the seller. You don't want to seem like you're being like nosy or whatever. It's just, you're trying to help them.
Right.
So what you say matters, or the way you ask it matters.
I would agree. And, but if you don't ask, for a couple of years, we didn't ask. And, so now when I sit down, now it became more of, look, I have like regular offers that I like to make. And so we just make them. And it's not about what we're solving for the seller anymore. It's more about, these are our offers that we make. Take it or leave it. Does it fit for you or not? And to me, I think that kind of defeats the whole purpose of doing owner finance or using creative finance in your business. I know people that do it, and I know people that make it work, but it makes you look just like a traditional wholesaler, right? That, hey, I can offer a low price. Here's my price, pretty much take it or leave it. I might be able to negotiate a little bit, but that would be putting you in the same kind of category. One of the questions I like to ask is, if the property was a rental, a simple question like, how much were you netting on the property after all of your expenses, like taxes, insurance, management, maintenance, repairs, utilities? And the reason that we want to know that number is why, either one of you?
cash flow
to know how much or we to know how much we'd be able to pay them.
Right. I mean, if we could replace what they're making and take away all the headache issues, we certainly have a lot better chance of making something like that work. If I could figure out a way to get you that much each month without all the hassles of being a landlord, would that be of interest to you? And now that's why we like working with landlords or burned out landlords, because they're already used to getting cash flow each month. And if we can show them how they can get pretty close, the same amount or even more than what they were getting, and not having to deal with tenants calling with maintenance issues, repair issues, vacancies, all of that kind of stuff, kind of makes being a landlord fun, right? In this case, they would just be a note holder, but something like that really changes their whole perspective. And I think that everyone likes being a landlord until you actually have to deal with landlord type issues, right? So another way it could be if I could pay you $1,800 a month. This is going back to term and back monthly cash flow. So one of the things that we're trying to do is not really have a conversation about interest really ever, and it rarely comes up, but on occasion it does. Sometimes people are stuck on something that they think they should be getting. And another way could be if I could pay you $1,800 per month for the next 10 years, is that something that you would consider? And, now it's kind of like a soft close. Like, I didn't mention really interest. I didn't mention anything else. I just threw something out there and see if it works.
Because most people care the least about interest.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. But on occasion, you have people that say, well, this is what's going on. Bank rates are this. I think I should get that. And I love what our last guest, Dan Diaz, said about interest, because as soon as they want to talk about interest, he said that he was talking about banks. So you want to be the bank. And if you want to be the bank, well, most of the loans that banks make are 0 to 3.5% down. That's where we'd have to start with first. And and now if you want to talk about getting a 5% interest rate, we could. But if you want me to treat you like a bank, you got to act like a bank. Do you own the property free and clear? It's so funny to me how people are just afraid to ask this question, because by asking it that way, if it is free and clear, no one has any issue telling you, yeah, it is. And if no, then it just leads into the next question, which is approximately how much do you still owe? Does that include your taxes and insurance? What's that,
Nicole? I usually just say, like, I assume this property is free and clear. Is that correct? And then they'll just say yes or no.
Yeah. And that they have no problem saying yes, right? And if it's no, the only reason that someone doesn't want to tell you what they owe on the property is because they think that somehow that gives you an upper hand and gives you some kind of advantage. And you're this slick real estate investor that's somehow going to take advantage of them. And so doing it kind of easy without, don't feel stress in your voice, and it's no big deal. And, look, if you don't know exactly how much it is, just give me a ballpark figure. And just know I'm trying to structure the best offer or offers for you. And if I've got to deal with some underlying debt, I need to know how to structure around it. And normally when they learn that, look, I'm just trying to create a win-win situation, they're a little more open to it.
Yeah, another thing I sometimes mention on that is, the more information that you are able to provide us, the more of a tailored offer that we can write for you that really fits your situation.
Yep, very true. All right, so let's talk about mistake number two, getting in light. Down payment. It's the one thing that, it could potentially be a deal killer for us. And most of our exit strategies, we want to get in with a small down payment, little to none if possible. And this is especially true if we're wholesaling or if we're trying to sell to an owner occupant. Understanding who your potential buyer is, so looking at what your potential exit strategies are, who you would be selling to, and typically what do they pay? Landlords will pay, up to 20%, maybe even a little more depending on the deal, the terms. Owner occupants will pay 10%, maybe a little more depending on them individually. Rehabbers will pay 10 to 20%. They're more interested in not having to get hard money. They're not really concerned about that down payment. But understanding who you may be dealing with should help you in determining what you are able to pay down payment wise to a seller. And I think some people get away from that and they are offering, more to the seller than what they should realistically expect to get back from their buyers. You might be able to offer more if the rest of the terms are really super good. Long-term, low interest, low payment, maybe no payments for a while, something to that effect. You might be able to get 25% down from a landlord, maybe even 30% down if the terms are super good. But if you start pushing it and you're going to find that either you won't have a lot of buyers or you're going to have a difficult time trying to accomplish what it is that you were trying to accomplish. I like the idea of being able to use private money to help compensate if, let's say there was just no way I could negotiate anything less than 10% down to a seller, and I wanted to sell to an owner-occupant, and I ended up getting 8% or 7%. Now, let's call it 8, because I don't know that we'd really want to take less than eight. But if we had a deficit, we might be able to make that up and pay someone to make up all of that money and through our cash flow, if we have really good cash flow. Or we use subordination, which would be borrowing against the property, basically to give the seller more money down and securing their position in second position. I like to use it typically when, especially right now, because interest rates are significantly higher, where I'm pretty much my max is like 25-30%. That I really don't want to go beyond that, just because I'm going to go get this financed through either a bank or privately. I'm going to have a blended interest rate, right? I'm going to have the down payment, and then I'm also going to have the note to the seller. That the bigger that first is, the harder it is for me to structure really good terms to make it work. Did you guys want to add anything? This is one of my favorites, right? The one that I think we see a lot of.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful to get in as light as possible, but I also think it's really helpful here to know your buyers, to like be regularly talking to them, because you listed the percentages there of who would pay what. Like you said, there's edge cases of people that they don't care what the down payment is as long as the cash flow is killer. So figuring out, talking to your big buyers in the market, figure out, hey, what would you pay as a down payment? How much are you looking for in terms of ROI or the operating income and everything?
Yeah, but when you have a good buyer's list and you know what most of your buyers are willing to do, but even your really good buyers are, if someone put down 25-30% and wanted to hold the property, if the cash-on-cash return really makes sense, they might consider it for sure, mm-hmm. especially if they got the money. For some of your normal buyers, to me, more than likely, you're going to have to be at that 15 to 20% down payment because, hey, it's still less than where you would go to get bank financing. So, good point. Nicole, do you have anything to add?
Nope, just knowing your exit is super important.
Yes. And I think that's actually going to be one of our mistakes later on. So we will cover that more in depth. Okay, this is a pet peeve of mine. I don't know why so many investors like to do this, but I never do it. I'm not saying it's wrong. I will back up my statement of why I don't do it, but offering interest only. And like I said, a lot of investors like to do it. It certainly helps keeping your debt service payment down. But which potentially can create better cash flow for you. And the seller nets more over time, of course, because everything you're paying is interest. But the biggest issue is there's no principal pay down. And especially in a market like we're dealing with now, where a little uncertainty, rising interest rates, falling prices to some degree, that... do I really want to pay interest only? You know, we're trying to get in light. Well, we just covered that. So we're not looking at putting 20 or 25 or 30% down to put us in a position where we have enough equity to refinance somewhere in the future. And what if prices go down for a while? And then it takes years for them to come back up. So now when our balloon comes due, our where we've got to pay this property off, what kind of position are we in? More than likely, we'd have to bring more money to the table, or interest rates are higher, and hey, it just destroys the cash flow because we got to borrow more money. So I'm not a huge fan of interest only. I can see how you could get away with it in the market that we were just dealing with, where things were appreciating quickly, dramatically. What's your take on this, Cody?
I feel like the only way to work is, like you said, in the market, but also if it was just a super long-term play. Like if you're like, yeah, I know I'm going to own this for 20 plus years, because over that time, it'll go down and back up and you'll probably get that equity. But unless the cash flow is good enough, even that would be uncomfortable, because you never know what would happen if you would want to refinance or your life situation changes. So yeah, that would be the only way I could see it working is if you
either that or we're buying at a big discount, right? Yeah. And so yeah, we're getting a big discount, and I would tell you that there's really not, I wouldn't say I would never use this, but I rarely, if ever, use this. And because typically what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give the seller, I'm trying to get their attention by offering a good price. I'm trying to get their attention by grossing or netting them a significant number, which this would help, interest only. But at the same time, we got to get in light, and we got to get to wherever the balloon payment is, it's still going to make sense for us or our buyer. If we put people or ourselves in a situation that's going to be difficult, then maybe this whole thing blows up in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever the case may be. And so to me, that's why this doesn't become something that I use often, actually almost never. So
could you use it in just a short-term like rehab type of situation?
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like that would be feasible as well. To get in, make the repairs, and get out, the interest pay down wouldn't, or certainly, the principal pay down wouldn't really matter.
Yep. No, short term, it probably doesn't matter, just because again, we got a big discount, right? The only issue, you've got to have enough equity to be able to sell it to a rehabber, right? Terms are great that we could replace hard money, but you can't replace the equity. You got to still have it.
Makes sense.
Nicole, what if did it you was, have anything? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Cody asked part of my question, but what if it was like interest only for the first year and then it went to like principal and interest after that? Like
certainly.
I guess that's like a hybrid rate, right?
Yeah, it's a blended rate. You're offering something first. I'm not sure why you would need to do that. You know, what I do a lot is offer some principal only payments for a year or two, trying to get the value down. So now I can offer interest, you know, to keep the payment within a certain range. Interest only, though, nothing changes, right? So, but could you do that? Yeah. You probably could. I'm not sure why you would. I can't think of an example that would make a ton of sense off the top of my head, but yeah, certainly. All right, so let's wrap this one up. We went through the first three mistakes. Hopefully you found some value in it, and go out and create some terms.